Welcome to the ITAD Talk Podcast with your host, Jeff Bittner.
I'd like to welcome Brett Eckhart to ITAD Talk. Brett is a third generation owner of a family business started by his grandfather in 1972. He worked for and with his parents for 12 years before they retired. And then he got the opportunity to run the business with his friends, who he has hired over the last 17 years. An entrepreneur at heart, Brett has helped grow the business from 30 employees to over 200 currently, and has expanded deeper into recycling, trucking, pipe, and storage business. Brett is a proud American who appreciates all the opportunities this country provides us as entrepreneurs, and he looks forward to more growth opportunities in the newest divisions of converter reclaim and copper reclaim. Okay, so Brett, I'd like to welcome you to our show this morning.
Yeah, thank you for the invite.
So as far as your physical spots, do you have multiple locations, or where are you based out of?
Yeah, we're based out of Idaho. We have facilities in Idaho and Oregon, and we have eight facilities, so eight recycling, and we have a couple auto salvage recycling facilities as well.
So on the auto, are you doing the catalytic converters?
Correct. Yeah, we've always purchased and processed catalytic converters because we are naturally we're in the recycling business, and we buy car bodies, and we have auto salvages, so we come across converters through that business as well. And then we started a new division in 2020, Converter Reclaim, where we have a whole segment of our business that just focuses on purchasing catalytic converters from other auto salvages, other recyclers, but primarily from towing companies and mechanic shops and whatnot across the United States.
Okay, and then as part of the converters, because the way I understand it, that then it either goes offshore or it goes to what's called a canner after that process. Is that correct?
Yeah, a decanner. So a decanner. We're a decanner. So we basically consolidate the converters, and then we process them. We cut them open, split the outside. It's usually a 400 series stainless shell off of the converters. We group the converters depending on previous assay and value, and we try and group like converters together so that when they're ready to go to the smelter, the processor, then they're ready to go at that stage in the game.
So do you take like an assay before you send it, or do you ever have any discrepancies where you say, no, I sent X, Y, and Z, and then the smelter says, no, it's not this grade or something?
Yeah, what we're doing is we're purchasing off of previous assay numbers. So each converter, there's probably, I think they roughly said, I think there's 30,000 different converters. So even if you have a Ford X4X or Expedition, but you live in California, a Ford Expedition that's a California car is going to have a different converter on it than a Ford Expedition, say, in Iowa or
Oh my Idaho. Gosh. Wow.
So it's a little more complicated than I think most people realize. Every converter has a code on it. And that code usually classifies what the material is that's in that 400 series shell. Basically the platinum, palladium, rhodium units. So there's a lot of due diligence, a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. And we've partnered with a smelter, and we are basically using their information and consolidating converters and shipping to them.
So what do you see as the future of that business? Because, I mean, like once electric cars take over, that's going to be gone. So, I mean, do you think it's got like a 20-year shelf life on that, or do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, here's my thought process on it is you hear a lot of talk about electric cars today and where the country's going, and And I have no doubt that the people are trying to make that shift, but that market really only lives because of tax incentives and what's going on right now. And still electric cars in the overall market, I think it still only makes up 2% of the overall vehicles on the road worldwide. So in order to get to even say a 30% number, you know, it's very ambitious by 2030, let alone by 2050. So, which we're trying to get to say 50%. So I think it still has a long runway in it, and that's not even including the, you know, if you start talking about hydrogen and platinum and rhodium, palladium, platinum specifically is used very heavily in these hydrogen powered processes. So I feel that even if you, let's say tomorrow, you wiped out all the ICE vehicles, all the internal combustion engine vehicles, there's going to be a big demand for these PGMs just for other applications, specifically for hydrogen. So the mines are getting, you know, what did I think I was reading here the other day that it's 80% of all the palladium and 85% of all the rhodium that is mined worldwide comes out of South Africa, right? These are ancient mines. They've been around for a long time. They're a mile and some change deep. And that material is getting harder and harder to come by. Yet, you know, you have these big emission standards coming down the line and less material coming out of the ground. I mean, the recycling part of this component is going to be humongous moving forward.
So like what percentage of your business is now working on that part of it, on the catalytic converters?
It's not a huge percentage of our business as a whole, but it's growing every year. It's kind of like anything you put your effort and energy into, right? You're going to start focusing around certain, you know, like we've been heavily in the copper business for a long time. We put our first wire chopping line in 2011. So we've been chopping copper wire since 2011, so 10 years now. We put another copper wire chopping line in this last year in 2020. So, you know, I made a post on LinkedIn this morning, but my hedge against the converter business is copper. So if you want to go all electric, that's fine. I mean, I want to position us to be in that market as well, right? Because you're gonna go one way or the other, and I'm of the opinion you're gonna need both. You're gonna need PGMs to help combat the emissions, but you're also gonna need a crazy electric grid to power everything electric moving forward. So,
right. So I was wondering if you could tell us the story of how your grandfather started the business back in 1972.
You know, my grandfather was an entrepreneur at heart. He was friends with a local judge and he worked for a company called, you know, United Scrap Metal. So there came an opportunity for him to buy the business when partnered with this judge in 1972 and own it. And so that's what he did. I mean, my grandpa was a sixth grade education guy. Wow. You know, he wasn't super educated when it comes to traditional brick and mortar schooling, but he went through the school of life, hard knocks, and he was a very driven individual, and just kind of found a way to make it work. The judge at the time was older than him. They partnered for a few years, and eventually he was ready to retire and be done with it. So then my grandpa was able to buy him out. And my grandpa had a couple of son-in-law in the business, one of them being my dad, which is it was my dad's dad. So eventually that's kind of how I got into it, was my dad did it and worked for my grandfather for years. And then in 1997, it was time for my grandfather to retire, and my dad actually created a partnership with now a big publicly traded recycling company, Schnitzer Steel. At the time, they were a private entity, and
So a question about that, because I worked for my father as well in the oil fields when I was going through high school. And I was just kind of wondering what the work ethic was like of your grandfather and your father, because like when we were bringing in wells, I mean, we'd be out there in the middle of the night, sometimes all night long when they're drilling and so on. So there was a huge work ethic that, and you were responsible for what you did, and you had to take the responsibility for your actions out there. So is that kind of what it was like, how you kind of learned the business?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, anybody that comes from a family business, especially a blue collar family business, whether you are working for yourself or you're just working for your dad and in another company or whatever. I mean, my dad tells the story all the time of, you know, he'd work all day, load trucks, you know, run a torch, cut iron. And then his favorite part of the day was being able to jump in a truck and drive to LA and deliver the load. Right. So mm-hmm. his time to get in the truck. And like, so, I mean, you're talking about working all day, run a torch, cutting a load of scrap, then getting in a semi truck that wasn't nearly as nice as what they have today and driving from Boise, Caldwell, Idaho, all the way to LA to deliver that scrap, get the money, turn around, find a backhaul, usually lumber at that time. And still we haul a lot of lumber coming back inland off the coast and then come back and do it again. My dad said the only reason he really got out of the truck was because he had kids and he didn't want to miss any more home time than he already was. Right. So my dad loved driving truck. It was his escape. You know, he goes, I'd be greasy, dirty all day long. And I finally got to take a shower and clean up and, you know, then get in a debt truck and drive across the country. He's like, you know, that was my escape. So, it's real blue collar. It's work ethic at its, you know, at its finest, just like you and your dad. And, you know, I mean, you bust your ass every single day. Like, yeah.
What's funny too is when I worked for him, I had a boss over me, but when I got home at night for dinner, he would grill me, you know, there'd be a list of like 20 things that we had to do that day. And of course, there'd always be like one thing that didn't get done. And that was the most important thing, apparently. So,
that's just being a dad, right? Like, I would assume do you have kids?
Yes, I do. In fact, my son is the general manager here at our company, and he started testing parts for me when he was like 7. So anyway.
So it's, as a dad, I tell my kid, and I have two young boys, right? I have a 12-year-old, about to be 12-year-old, and an 8-year-old. And I said, my job isn't to be your friend. Like, I love you. I said, someday we're going to be really good friends. I said, but right now is not the time. I said, because my job is to push you and make you accountable and make a good human out of you, right?
Right.
And how do you make a good human in today's society, in my opinion, is you teach them how to work and with their mind, with their body, and be accountable. Like, be accountable for what they're doing. And I said, you know, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to, you know, to give you those standards and hopefully build them into you while you're young. And then someday we're going to be great friends, like my dad and I are today. But there was a lot of years where, you know, I was like, golly,
he's always busted me, right?
Yeah, always. And he recognized that, you know, I mean, so
it was tough.
Probably very similar upbringing.
What was funny is I didn't know that wasn't normal. So one time I had a friend that came over to stay for a few days. And then, you know, my dad calls me up at 10 o'clock at night. Okay, we got to go check this well we just brought in. I'm like, okay, so jump up, throw my clothes on and go. And then I get back, I don't know, 1 a.m. And my friend's going, wow. He goes, I've never seen anybody work that hard. And I said, really? I go, I just thought that was normal.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of funny.
100%. Well, that's what I think you get, you know, I mean, my dad got he's a high school diploma guy. My mom, similar, you know, I mean, you have two routes, right? You know, and I think if you can find the combination of, you know, a little bit more education in whatever field you want, and not necessarily like a book education, it could just be a technical school or a trade school, but a little more education around something that you enjoy doing. And then you combine that with work ethic. And I think that it's, you know, I think that the opportunity out there is enormous. And I really believe that. And it's just because that was what was taught to me early is if you're willing to go to work and just like work, I mean, if you're just willing to put in the time, hours, effort, energy, man, the world really is your oyster because there's not a lot of people that are willing to do it anymore. You know?
Yeah. Isn't that true? I mean, we're mm-hmm. all the, I mean, I don't know about where you're at, but it's hard to find workers, you know, anymore. So
it is. It's difficult. I mean, I talk to as you do as well, I'm sure. I mean, just because the nature of our business, I talk to people all over the country and other parts of the world, and you know, the U.S. right now, it's, you know, it's a challenging labor environment, and not even just labor. I mean, equipment operators, truck drivers, you know, some office staff. I mean, it's just, it's a challenge, and it's something I think we'll overcome, but it doesn't mean that right now it's not a battle every day.
Right. So another question for you, could you tell us a little bit about the story of 1997 in the Sierra Shear?
Okay. Yeah. In 1997, my grandfather was, my dad was ready for my grandfather to retire. Whether my grandfather was ready or not, I guess that's a conversation for my dad. But my dad was ready to do it his way. It was his turn. He felt like to push the business. He had some ideas. So my grandfather was at the point. He had a couple heart surgeries. He was ready to mm-hmm. retire, I think. And my dad had a plan. So he was selling scrap to a company, Schnitzer Steel, based out of Portland, Oregon at that time. And they kind of approached, they were trying to grow and looking for strategic partnerships to feed a big shredder that they had in Portland that they had just put in. And so they approached my dad and as like, hey, maybe we would be a good opportunity, you know, to partner up. And you want to grow your business. We want to grow ours. You know, we obviously they're much, much bigger than us. We'll provide some capital, allow you to go, you know, buy some equipment that you need to grow. And my dad basically just said, you know, it's now or never, you know, this is my shot to, you know, get basically like what previously would have been like a private equity funding or a part, you know, like what it is, the way it exists today is, you know, going out and doing a Series A or a pre, you know, I mean, funding, right. A funding round. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that at this point, it was a funding round of a partnership to buy some equipment, provide some liquidity into the business. And, so we could buy some equipment and grow. And that's where that shear came from, was my dad selling 50% of the business to Schnitzer Steel and providing enough capital to then retire my grandfather and buy a little bit of equipment to kind of grow the business in the direction that he saw fit at the time. So big gamble.
Wow.
You know, he took on a lot of debt that year to get that done. And so I guess the Sierra Shear, you know, means a lot to me just in the fact that I know what it represents and, you know, the risk and the what he had to go through to get it done. So, like, you know, that's why it's important to me.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.